Thank you very much, Frank, and thank all of you for your generous reception. I think I was probably the reason that this meeting got started late, and let me say that I am simply happy that this is not a seminar on traffic safety. Otherwise, I would be in a great deal of trouble, and I may be anyway. Frank asked me if I would mind going on first, and I said no. I would be happy to go on first. I did not want to repeat an experience I had 2 weeks ago, where I was speaking to a convention of the Oklahoma Young Republicans. I was supposed to be the keynote speaker, and I was getting ready to do my oratorical best, and it happened that by sheer chance, Walter Judd happened to be in the same hotel and was asked if he would come by and make a few remarks, which he did immediately prior to my keynote speech. And the effect was very similar to Toscanini warming up a crowd for Herman's Hermits. And with the co-panelists that I have today, I certainly didn't want to get in that situation again. We have, as I'm sure everyone here knows, two of the most learned and articulate men in the United States. Quite apart from considerations of conservatism and liberalism, they are two of the outstanding scholars in this country, so recognized by everyone. Having such co-panelists and being myself an expert on nothing, I had to consider in what form I would cast my remarks. And it occurred to me that being non-expert, having no expertise, whatever, that the best thing to do would be to go cosmic and to discuss everything, thereby not having to demonstrate very much knowledge about anything. The effort that I would like to make is to put the topic before us into a kind of general framework, as I see it, not necessarily a framework which the other panelists would accept, but one man's view of what the distinctions are between the goals and premises of the American tradition and the goals and premises of the great society. And this is an awfully difficult thing to do because there are many disparate elements involved in both of these conceptions. Defining a tradition is a very difficult thing. Many elements go into the making of a tradition. Defining the great society is more difficult yet. It seems like just about everything has gone into the making of that particular conception. But I think it is permissible to aggregate certain characteristics under both of these headings, to sum up the essence of each as best we can, and to set them off one against the other. And I think that if we do that, the first thing that occurs to me is that the great society measured against the American tradition is a kind of black mass. It is a total reversal, an inversion on almost every general and particular point, I believe, of what the American experiment was supposed to be all about. As I conceive it, the American constitutional system, as envisioned by the founding fathers, consisted of two essential points, many subsidiary points, but two essential ones. At the political level. The first of which was the idea that the foremost object of all of our political arrangements ought to be to extend as widely as possible the range of decisions open to the individual, to maximize, insofar as an imperfect human nature allows, the range of options, the degree of freedom which the individual enjoys. And to this end, this is the second or corollary point, the founders believed that the major thing that you had to do was to limit the reach of governmental power, because although they acknowledged that government was a necessary institution in society, without which there could be no freedom, because it maintains the arena of order within which alone freedom can flourish. They acknowledged as well that government is a dangerous institution because it is, in the final analysis, a compulsion. And if too much compulsion is exercised, if too much power is aggregated in one place, then a government can become a hazard to the freedoms it is instituted to protect. I believe, and I think the chairman of the seminar, Mr. Meyer, believes that underlying this constitutional view was the notion that government has certain paradigmatic functions to perform which add up to maintaining this arena of order. These functions being first and most obvious, the protection of the citizenry from the incursions of foreign enemies, the second of which is to maintain the peace internally, the third of which is to adjudicate disputes among various members of the society. Now, there are many, many other functions which are built into our Constitution, many others which can be superadded from some philosophical perspective, but in essence, these are the functions necessary to maintain the arena of order. The founders were not particularly doctrinaire about this vis-a-vis government as such, but they were very doctrinaire about it with respect to the federal government. And I would just like to quote, to suggest to you, and I'm sure this is a familiar quotation to most of the people here, Madison's words in The Federalist, number 45, which set forward his view of what the federal government was supposed to do and what the state governments were supposed to do, or what functions were supposed to be left within the purview of the state governments. Madison said, "The powers delegated by the proposed Constitution to the federal government are few and defined. Those which are to remain in the state governments are numerous and indefinite. The former will be exercised principally on external objects as war, peace, negotiation, and foreign commerce, with which last the power of taxation will, for the most part, be connected. The powers reserved to the several states will extend to all the objects which, in the ordinary course of affairs, concern the lives, liberties, and properties of the people, and the internal order, improvement, and prosperity of the state." That was, in essence, the point of view which animated the men who founded this country. It is the view that is, I think, encapsulated in our Constitution, in the Federalist Papers, in the debates in the Federal Convention in Philadelphia in 1787, and most clearly, I think, in the writings of men such as Madison himself and John Adams, who were the great theoreticians of the American experiment. This was the intellectual consensus out of which the structure of our system arose, and thus, I think, earns the designation of the American tradition. Well, if we go on this broad point to what the great society is doing, it is rather apparent to everyone here that this function, this set of functions, is not being performed. The federal government today is conceived as a kind of catch-all, a repository for all the powers which any government could possibly want, connected to every conceivable variety of experience in our country, superintending every aspect of our lives down to the most minute. Additionally, and this I think is one of the curiosities which might deserve some reflection at this meeting, there seems to have set in a kind of law of compensation in the American system, so that the same government which is today doing everything which the Founding Fathers thought it should not do is failing to do the things that it should be doing. That is, as the federal government sets about to doctor us, to insure us, to educate us, to feed us, to regulate advertising and packaging and label cigarettes as poison, to harass dissenters, to regulate the airwaves, to manage the news, and to register us for living at age 18, as is now proposed. The same government which is doing all of these things, or trying to do all of these things, is defaulting the essential functions necessary to maintain the arena of order. It is not fulfilling the foreign policy function, and it is not fulfilling the function of suppressing crime and violence. And I think that there seems to be some kind of a balance here, which says that a government which takes on illicit functions fails to perform as it should those which are granted to it. All of this general inversion of the underlying principles of our government is manifest on an almost daily basis in many particular things. I will not try to go into all of them, but I think we see it day in and day out. The federal government, which is supposed to be confined and limited, is of course de facto unlimited. The gray areas, which under the 10th Amendment were to remain with the states, are now preempted by the federal authority. If there is a doubt, the presumption is in favor of the federal government. The president, who is supposed to execute the things which Congress legislated, in fact, is the guide of Congress. He is the master of Congress. He proposes, Congress, to a certain extent, disposes, usually under the lash of the president. In this latest controversy over a proposed constitutional convention, we see the curious effect of this proposal on people like Senator William Proxmire and Senator Joseph Tidings of Maryland, who say that it is outrageous to have a constitutional convention. It is an assault upon the American system, although in point of fact, the procedures for having this convention are spelled out very explicitly in the Constitution itself, whereas the Supreme Court's dictates to the state legislatures are nowhere spelled out in the Constitution. And indeed, as has been a point of contention for many years among legalists, the power of judicial review is not itself spelled out. The usurpations of a subordinate part of the government are thus made superior in the contemporary view to the concept of the Constitution itself. All of this is technical material. There are many others. The reversals in the sphere of economics. Today, the taxing power is used to manipulate the economy rather than to raise revenue. Practical incentives have been reversed to reward indolence rather than industry. But I think that the most important of the reversals which confronts us, the most important of the inversions which have been worked upon the American system by the ministrations of the Great Society and of the other representatives of the liberal orthodoxy which have preceded it, is the inversion which has taken place in the American character. The Founding Fathers, it is quite apparent, assumed a certain character type to exist in the United States, which would allow a regime of freedom to exist. And John Adams, I think, put it very succinctly when he said, without virtue, there can be no political liberty. He assumed, and the founders assumed, not that man was perfect. On the contrary, they feared men with power, but that there was a certain character structure, a certain capability for self-reliant behavior in the American people, which would allow them to function in conditions of freedom, and which conditions of freedom would in turn encourage. The American tradition, that is, assumed a sense of internal discipline at the philosophical level to make people capable of organizing their lives and acting sanely and purposefully in freedom. It assumed, that is, internal discipline and external liberty. The Great Society reverses the equation. It assumes and encourages a lack of internal discipline, which makes people incapable of selecting purposes and incapable of organizing their behavior to follow value guidelines, to attain their goals. It assumes, that is, internal liberty from value restraints and external discipline imposed by the state. I think it is at this point in the dissolution of the American character that the two poles of liberal orthodoxy find their common ground. The moral disintegration and the welfare state compulsions both issue in a personality without interior limits, which becomes lost, which has no purposes, no guidelines, which in the Durkheim phrase is anomic, and ends by burying itself in some larger collectivity in the hope of gaining significance and definition. The obvious examples are the juvenile gangs, and the most frightening examples are the various modern authoritarian states. And what this amounts to, in point of fact, is a kind of infantilization of the American culture. a prolonged existence of unchecked impulse, a prolonged demand for instant gratification without any restraint or any waiting, which are characteristic of the child, and dependence, absolute dependence on others because of inability to achieve one's desires through orderly performance. And I think this, the creation of this character type is very much of the essence in discussions of crime and the new morality in the United States. So, to summarize in brief, I think that at every level, in terms of moral philosophy, constitutional theory, political practice, foreign policy, domestic policy, and in matters of maintaining internal peace and protecting us from foreign enemies, the great society has turned the original conception inside out. Our founders conceived of a nation of self-reliant men who would tend to their own affairs, with government providing the framework of order within which these men could go peacefully about their business, to which I believe the great society replies with Marlowe, but that was in another country, and besides, the wench is dead. Thank you.